Hello, everyone. I'm Tech Sergeant Shane Hughes, and you're listening to Beyond the Horizon, a podcast produced by the Ohio Air National Guard's 178th Wing in Springfield, Ohio. And in today's show, I interviewed Colonel Mark Johnson about his career and his role as the Vice Commander of the 178th Wing. I hope you enjoy the show. If you would, go ahead and just start by telling me what inspired you to enlist and how that led you to where you are today.
Well, it's a long story. As a lot of people that are in the military, as a little kid, you see airplanes go over, and I, from a very young age, I wanted to fly. I was fortunate my parents took me on different flights here and there. My first flight, I guess, was when I was 1 year old. My parents took me on a flight on a Ford Trimotor. They had island hops up in Lake Erie. Grew up in Northwest Ohio, and that was my first airplane ride at 1 year old. So ever since then, I've always loved it. Got to fly. Our sixth grade class took a field trip to Toledo Express, and we all got to be in a small airplane and just loved it. So from a young age, I knew I always wanted to fly, and what better way to fly in my thought than to join the military and fly. So that kind of led to what I did in high school, and that was one of my goals going into college was to join ROTC at Ohio State. And from there, it's been a living the dream, as they say.
So I reviewed your official biography, and you did some time up at National Guard Bureau. Mm-hmm. How did your time at the National Guard Bureau level impact your view on leadership at the wing level?
It was a very interesting tour, I'll say that. D.C. is obviously the national capital, which was one of the draws. I was fortunate growing up, I had cousins that lived out there, and we'd go out routinely every couple of summers just to visit them, but to go out there and actually work and see how the Guard Bureau works and how all the units in the Guard fit into the bigger picture was really interesting, really exciting, and how it shaped my view of the units and how it shaped my leadership perspective really was that it gave a perspective of why we do things. Sometimes even at my level and at my age, you know, you look and how do I fit into the bigger picture? How do we as individuals and as a unit fit into the bigger picture of the national defense, if you will? And that's probably the biggest thing is seeing how there's a cycle, a yearly cycle to everything that happens. The National Defense Authorization Act, the National Defense Strategy, all that stuff is being worked out in D.C. at the highest level with the think tanks at the Pentagon, and with the president and his cabinet and so forth. So you see how that trickles down to the Pentagon, then to the National Guard Bureau, then to the Air National Guard Readiness Center, which is where I worked at Andrews. And from there, the direction goes out to the 54 states and territories and the 90 wings across it. And it was really neat to see how all that plays together to getting an airman recruited, getting them to their tech school, and getting them into the fight. So it is really neat to just see how that all plays together. And again, it was a fantastic tour. I'm glad to be out of D.C. because it is as crazy as it appears at times with the traffic and congestion. And like I say, I was really tickled to get the opportunity to come back here in Ohio and continue serving.
Well, we're glad to have you back home.
Thanks.
So how has the ongoing pandemic affected our unit, and what advice would you give to young airmen on leading during a crisis?
Pandemic obviously has taken everybody by surprise. When I was at the Bureau, I was in charge of a department that handled the domestic operations for the Guard, basically the crisis action team for the whole Air National Guard. And we worked through several hurricanes, as most people are aware. Over the last couple of years, we got to see that at the national level. And I think that gave me a perspective coming into this pandemic that we're all gonna have to step up and dig deep and have a lot of fortitude to get through this. Because just like the hurricanes that we have and still have, those are really going to test us and test our ability to be not only ready and relevant, as Colonel Fitzgerald has us pointed in that direction as her goals, but then to also be, I'll say, the steadfast, the rock, the support that a lot of the community needs to see out there. And I think that kind of goes underappreciated at times, even our airmen that are working the food banks, our airmen that are out there doing some of the testing or helping out with the correctional facilities and stuff. That really, when you put the uniform on, you know, it really shows that, hey, we are there, and people look to us in a time of crisis as somebody to be stable and to be that guide. We may not always have the best, we may not always know what to do, but the community will look to us to be that guidance. So for the airmen out there that may be involved in this, or you know, are just getting into the service and wondering, hey, how do we as the guard lead during these times? Because it is, we have two bosses. For those young airmen that may not know, we have the federal mission, which works for the president in defense of the Constitution of the United States. But we also, when we raise our right hand, we are defending the Constitution of the state of Ohio. And we work for Governor DeWine in a domestic operation status. So we need to be able to, like I say, be that force there that is stable. And going into any crisis, the number one thing I think is to try to remain calm, remain as clear-headed as you can, realizing, one, you're not going to know everything, but you will rely on your training. You know, all the little stuff that you learn in BMT, you know, how to work together as a team, how to listen, how to come up with ideas to move forward. All those things come into play when you're faced in that situation, and you must lead so that the community sees us out there doing what's right to help take care of the community. So, basically, the old adage, you know, in being calm in crisis, just showing that you don't. Everybody's under stress. Everybody knows that. But if you can, the more you can just be calm, remain calm, look for the facts, do the best you can in everything that you're given. Utilize all the information that you have, the different perspectives when you're working in a team. What assets do we have here at the Guard that we can utilize for whatever domestic operation it is? Be aware, be well-trained, be aware of what assets we have, and be ready to execute. I mean, that's the part of being ready that Colonel Fitzgerald talks about. We need to be there, know what we're doing, and with a calm sense, we can go forward and help the community and the nation, whatever we needed.
So what are some of your future goals for the unit?
Well, working with the senior staff and Colonel Fitzgerald, for the near term, obviously being ready and relevant is our goal. And right now, being relevant is being challenged by the COVID virus. But I think we've shown that we are ready and we can be relevant with our security forces, working with Department of Corrections. And we have some people that aren't in security forces that are helping out, some of the augmentees and some other folks that just raise their right hand and say, yep, I'm ready to go. On the medical side as well, we're getting tasked a lot there. So in the near term, our goal is to help sustain those operations that we're being asked to perform, as well as the food banks. And I know you've been out a few times, you know, from the public affairs perspective. And that's another facet of it, is we need to be able to let the public know what we're doing internally as well. Let the airmen know, hey, these are opportunities where you can go out and serve your country. The short-term goal is to help get through the state and our communities get through this pandemic, so we can get back to preparing for what our next challenge may be. So the goal going forward, there's obviously a lot of facets to that. Being a wing of over 1,000, we have the different groups that have, especially with the ISRG and the OG right now, we have two very, I'll say, operational mission sets. With the ISRG, we're fortunate to have, you know, some of the newest opportunities the military has deemed necessary to meet the different threats. You know, it's not just all aircraft. Now we have all these other things, whether it's cyber attacks, which is another realm all to itself that we have to be prepared as a nation to be able to defend against. Space is another one, as we may see Space Force coming here with the 126th and maybe some of the other intelligence portions in the ISRG that we have. So, and I'm talking kind of around it, but the goals really depend on what the federal government needs. Like I mentioned before, the National Defense Strategy really sets in play what the DoD needs to focus on to meet the future threats. And right now, you know, there is a goal to be ready for a near peer threat. We've been wrapped in counterterrorism for decades, literally since 2001. So kind of a refocus of that, and that's where the relevant portion of what Colonel Fitzgerald and the team has talked about, we need to be able to pivot, if you will, and remain relevant to future requirements that our country has for its military members. And so that's where we've got growth in the ISRG. We will see how Space Force comes out, if we're going to be part of that. Right now, it looks like we may be part of it. We do have the 126th, which is our Space Intelligence Squadron. So that's exciting, because as that grows, you know, who knows where the Space Force is going to go. If you'd have said that the Air Force was going to be a large force like it is now back in 1947 when we separated from the Army Signal Corps, you know, nobody back then knew, except for some of those, Hap Arnold and some of those Doolittle and those others that had the vision. We're seeing that right now with the Space Force. In 10, 15, 20 years, will the Space Force be as large as the Air Force and the Navy and the Army, or will it be bigger? So it really is exciting to see. And that's where the goals for the wing, we need to be attuned to that. And if we're going to be attached to the Space Force, you know, to what extent are we going to be attached? We're doing great stuff, like I say, in the ISRG and the other three squadrons, but they could be aligned to the space mission as well. So that'll be exciting to see. That's probably one of the goals on the ISRG side. On the OG side, part of our goal is to continue to be relevant there as well. There's discussion of sunsetting the MQ-9 in the next 5, 10, 15 years, but typically, not unlike, you know, the F-16s getting replaced by the F-35, there's likely to be a replacement for that, and we want to make sure we're well postured to be able to take on whatever that next is, as well as there's some other initiatives. We're in a very unique location here at Springfield with the close proximity to Wright-Patterson. We've got, some of the other, you know, goals and initiatives for the wing. We've got a great relationship with AFRL, which is Air Force Research Labs. They've got a human performance wing that does a lot of studying of how people learn and train, so we can train better. And we're excited to have one of their, one of their spinoffs that we've been working with for the last decade over at Wright Path. They're actually going to spin off and utilize one of our facilities here to continue to be able to train some of our theater operations center, our TOCs, and our air crews to be able to work together in a coordinated environment. So we're looking forward to growing that, as well as whatever, you know, MQ next comes along. And with the Wright Path ties, not only with AFRL, but AFLCMC, which I think logistics, I can't remember what it stands for, but Air Force Logistics Center, where they do a lot of the planning and programming for the different platforms, if you will. I know we've got some folks in ops that actually work on the camera that we use in the MQ-9. They work in that division there. Everybody, when the MQ-9 came out, wanted a launch and recovery element at their unit so that they could have iron on the ramp and have a maintenance group, kind of like the old days in a traditional flying squadron. And that's something we've looked at here, and that's where the ties with AFLCMC and our systems project office, our SPO, and some of those other entities at Wright Path that help develop and advance those weapons systems. Being this close, I think we're in a perfect position should the Air Force and the DoD say, hey, we need some more capabilities to be able to not only launch and recover MQ-9s for training, local stateside training, but we also would have that tie because of all those other entities that are at Wright Path, where we could be somewhat of a test bed if they want to try out a new advanced camera per se. They don't have to travel to Arizona or other test places around the United States. They can drive 15 minutes down the road and test it right here. And our airmen could be a large part of that. From the ops perspective, those are kind of some of the things we're looking for in the future, and would be some of the goals. On the support group side, we had the tornadoes come through right before I got here in 2019. Unfortunate event, but we are in not quite Hurricane Alley of the Oklahomas and Texas, but especially with the, you know, the Xenia tornado is kind of a benchmark that everybody looks back to. We do have tornadoes coming through this area, and that brings on the need for a strong domestic operations response. And we not only have a debris clearing capabilities, we also have swift water rescue and confined space extraction capabilities, as well as our traditional prime beef capabilities with, you know, dump trucks, loaders, and all that type of equipment. That I think that's an area we can continue to grow, mostly in the support of our local communities. You know, did the local community know we had all the debris clearing capabilities? You know, we weren't called in 2019, from my understanding. where that's something we were hoping to do this last year, but COVID obviously forced us to cancel, but was to have more of a kind of a community open house so community local leaders can see the capabilities that all they need to do is, you know, work with their local governments and get a hold of the governor and say, hey, we would request, you know, support from the 178th. Can we get, you know, some of their debris clearing assistance? We just had a tornado or, you know, whatever natural disaster may happen. So from the support group, I think that's one of the areas. And then obviously, I've got a little bit of time in CE, several years in civil engineering. So I truly see that we need to continue not only with CE, but security forces as they're being tasked a lot now. And the other support functions, I really do have an appreciation that to be able to project power, whether it's air power in the MQ-9 or intelligence power in the ISRG, you need a strong support group because that is the basis. You start with a bare base, you start with water, you start with a power supply, and from there, you build upon that. And so that's where our support group continue to grow, continue to, in their excellence, and not only show the community what we can do, but continue to build out the strong support we need for the other missions on base. So, and then Med Group, I can't leave them out either. They've done a fantastic job, not only with the COVID, obviously, but to continue along the future plans that they have. I know there's always some challenges in getting our folks trained, especially like in the ER environment, where we have some requirements to be able to step up and be able to assist with trauma or triage type things. And I know that's always a challenge, but I know our crew over there is working hard with the local communities to be able to get in, get our folks in to get this training so that we can remain relevant and be ready, you know, if we're called downrange to help out with those sort of things. So I know I've said a lot there about the future vision, but I don't want to forget one other thing that some people may not know, that on January 1, we're going to bring the 123rd Air Control Squadron, which is down at Blue Ash, will be under the 178th Wing. So we're excited about that. If you don't know what the 123rd Air Control Squadron is, I challenge everybody to, you know, Google it and see what they do, because that's another neat facet of capabilities we have in the Ohio Air National Guard. Just a short snippet of what they do is they basically, if I said AWACS to people, they might go, oh, yeah, I've heard of AWACS. I know what they do. Well, there's also ground units that have the same capabilities, and their capabilities are basically this. There's radar feeds that'll come into a scope, or nowadays it's all computer-generated, but it'll come onto a computer screen, and our fine young men and women in the 123rd will start with surveillance. If you're in an austere location, or even right now we have people 24/7 around the perimeter of the United States tracking every aircraft that comes in or out of the country, and they should be aligned on a flight path. They should be in this sector at a certain time, and if they're not, that's where, for example, our folks at the 180th up in Toledo, they've got an air sovereignty alert mission, and if something goes wrong with somebody coming into the country, based off what the 123rd folks do if they were in those locations, it could be something where we'd scramble one of our armed fighters to go intercept and see what's going on. So that's, I'll say, the first part of the 123rd's mission is that surveillance to keep us safe day and night. And in a combat theater, they would do the same. You know, in a combat area, people coming in and out of the theater, making sure that they're who they say they are. And it gets more exciting as you dig deeper, too. The controls will also work with our different airframes, whether it's the fighters, where they may be directing them to intercept other air threats, which you'll call an air-to-air engagement. Our 123rd controllers are and techs are 100% engaged in that. They'll direct our fighters onto enemy aircraft and help them engage. They'll also help them work with, for example, like the 121st. They'll help our fighters at the 180th rendezvous with the tankers out of the 121st. So somebody, unless you've seen the whole air picture, it's really a neat, it's a neat choreograph of how they make all this happen and basically manage the air picture and manage the air environment, if you will. So that's what they do at the 123rd. And we're excited to have them on board here. Great bunch of folks. I got to go down there a few months ago as they got ready to deploy, and they're excited to go and do their job downrange and hope they're safe over there and complete the mission, and then we'll be glad to have them back. But and some point we hope to be able to have a little celebration as they join the 178.
That is an extensive to-do list. How do you handle it all?
We have a good team. I mean, it was really, I was really excited, like I say, to come back to the 178th. when I talked to Colonel Hesterman, he gave me the call. I just happened to be at Disney World with the family on vacation from when I was down at the Bureau. And, you know, they were looking for me to come in potentially as a support group commander or potentially as the vice. And he talked through who our team was, and with Colonel Fitzgerald being the vice at the time, and Colonel Hesterman, I had been fortunate to meet him a couple times, and General Camp had actually come down to the Bureau, and I was able to meet him. I thought, you know what, you can handle anything, you know, if you have a good team. And then when I got here, the opportunities opened up, and to be the vice with Colonel Fitzgerald and working for her has just been phenomenal. And that's how you handle things. I mean, when you have a good team and you have to work together. And I'll say this, because there's always going to be more than any one person can do. There's always going to be that way. So for the young airmen that are listening to this, it can be a challenge and it can be overwhelming, especially if you're a drill status guardsman. And I was for several years in my earlier years. So number one, you have to work as a team. Balance it out, kind of tongue in cheek. When I first got into the guard, I was actually with Mansfield. And my supervisor at the time said, you'll know you're doing it right when your family's upset with you, your civilian employer's upset with you, and we're upset with you from the guard perspective. You know your balance is about right. And again, that's tongue-in-cheek, but it really is part of your growing up as a young airman is learning that balance. You can never do everything that's out there. There'll always be a to-do list. And if you get to the point where you feel overwhelmed, you know, sometimes just take a break. And the biggest thing is you know, take your leave. If you have leave, don't be afraid to step away at times. Everybody should do that because you need to be able to clear your mind. And then when you get back into the fight, talk to your supervisor. That to-do list will always be there. As you grow older and in your career, you'll know what's important more so than when you're younger. But even today, I talk with Colonel Fitzgerald about, hey, am I doing what your priority is? And that's where anybody, and no matter if they're, you know, an airman or lieutenant colonel, they're a colonel. Does it tie with her goals of being ready and relevant? That's what everybody can put in their mind and say, am I doing what needs to be done first and foremost to be able to be ready and relevant? But aside from that, everybody has the right and should go to their supervisor and not only request the feedback that we always talk about, fight for feedback, as it said. But ask the supervisor, what are your priorities? What am I doing now that I don't need to do? And what am I not doing that you need me to do? It can be that simple. And then as young airmen, don't be afraid to take the appropriate risks at your level. And that's another thing you'll learn going through a career is what risk level can I take? You know, and is it something at my rank that I can take that risk, or do I have to push up to the next level? And then don't be afraid to ask your supervisor and stuff, especially, you know, with the direction of the Chief of Staff of the Air Force. You know, change faster or we're going to be irrelevant. Okay, so that he has given us the okay, and good supervisors will give their airmen the okay to take those risks. And then it's up to the growth of those airmen and the supervisor to say, hey, what level of risk can I take? You know, we can't take risk. I can't take risk for Colonel Fitzgerald. Sometimes some things she'll let me take risk for the wing. So I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but some of those things are part of the growth that I think as airmen go through their career, we'll learn. And then it does make it a lot easier. You know, like I said, how do you get everything done? Well, you're never going to get everything done. But if you can take some of those tools that you have, know what your risk acceptance level is, know what I have to go to my supervisor for to accept that risk, know what they have to go to the commander for to accept that risk, or to the tag, you know, wherever it happens to fall, or to NGB or Chief of Staff of the Air Force. There's risk at all level. Get the priorities that your commander needs or your supervisor needs, do them the best of your ability, and then take the risk at your level and keep pushing the envelope. We need our young airmen to do that.
In your opinion, what defines a good leader?
Number one, I think there's a lot of good different leadership styles. As you go through your career, and even before that, sports is always touted as building leaders. Well, it is one avenue. There's also other, whether you're into music, drama, whatever it is you enjoy doing, you can become a leader and learn from those experiences as you're growing up and then as you're into the military, as you join the military, whether you're put on that third stripe, you know, as a senior airman or airman first class and senior airman, and you get that sergeant stripe, you start to grow as a leader. And it's interesting, and I know I'm going to kind of bounce around here a little bit, in reading some books on leadership, it's interesting how the military will look to the civilian world for different traits and what they're looking for in leadership. And then likewise, the civilian community will look to the military and say, okay, what do you guys and gals look for from a good leader? And some of it is tangible, and some of it is just is a gut instinct. In other words, some of it is, what do they say, environment, and some of it is just innate in the person. So I know it kind of bounced around there a little bit, but tying all that together, I think it comes down to a good moral base, if you will, kind of looking at the Air Force core values, integrity first. I would rather have somebody in my organization. They may not be the most talented person, but if they have the integrity and are willing to give 100% and ultimately are willing to fight for their country, that's what I'll take in a leader. And then the next level would be, do they inspire others to do the same? And that's what, as you go up in your career, will start, I'll say, defining different individuals in their, it's not that you can't learn to do that. Some may have it more innate in their personality. Others may have to learn a little bit. But they should take all the inputs they get. They sometimes they'll say 360 feedback from your junior enlisted to your senior commanders. If you can get inputs from all around you to kind of see where you're at in that realm, and then based off of, a strong moral character, integrity first, not being afraid to go out there and take the acceptable risk at your level and lead airmen for that mission. So I'll kind of throw out one other thing I heard. Actually, it was from my kids. They had a football banquet. My son plays football, and the head coach, he does a really nice job. Like I say, that's where sometimes you can see people have that leadership ability. Some have to grow it. And he told the team three things. He said, you will do well in life if, number one, you show up. You got to show up. And sometimes in today's society, you know, you look at some people that they have a hard time getting out of bed and just going to work or just going to school. So first and foremost, just show up. Okay. And the second thing he said is have a good attitude. You know, that plays into that leadership as well. Do you have a good attitude? If you have a good attitude, it'll be contagious to those around you, 360, and they'll be inspired to do the same thing. And the third thing he says is be ready to fight like hell. And that says a lot. And I take that as a military member as well. You know, we got to be ready with those two other things. Show up every day, learn your job, be ready to go, and be ready to defend not only your community, your state, but our nation. So, again, that's what I look for in a leader, somebody that can inspire others to have that mindset to be able to go there and answer the call when we're asked to go.
What advice would you have for young airmen today?
As far as advice, it'd be look at, as you talk to other people, build your vision of where you want the unit to be, because it has changed and it will change. And it's not just change for change's sake, but it's change for a reason. Part of what we're doing here is we're trying to reinvigorate the community action team, and that is to help build the culture. So I guess I'm kind of tying in some of these things as far as advice to airmen is learn from what people have said and come with your experiences, come with your goals, and prepare to take the unit to the next level. And some of the ways you do that are kind of like what I had said before. Number one, show up. Number two, you know, have a great attitude. And number three, you know, fight like hell. You know, if your job is you know, in the dining facility, daggummit, go there every day and make the best meals you can, do the best services. If you're working in a gym downrange or whatever happens to be, do the best you can. If your job is to recruit, or if your job is to maintain somebody's financial records, do it the best you can, and that will pay off. You know, the cream rises to the top, as I always say. We need everybody in the game fighting towards that ultimate goal of being able to protect and defend our nation. And I'll maybe throw a couple other things for our young airmen. Don't be afraid, kind of along that lines of taking risk. Don't be afraid to seek out opportunities. For example, this latest bout with COVID and the opportunities there. Talked to a young airman in the med group that said, hey, she was out for a month or so working at the food bank. First deployment. Of course, some folks are ribbing her. Oh, your first deployment, you know, it's just down the street. But as a young airman, that was the world to her, and rightfully so. You know, our mission is not always going to be, you know, dropping bombs on the Taliban in Afghanistan. You know, that's one aspect of what we do. But like I said, we all need to do what we can do with our job that we're given and make things better. And she was doing that. And for that, we applaud her. It was awesome. She got to be out in the community, you know, be that focal point to help the community, to be that good ambassador for the Guard, to show, hey, we are here to support even the local communities, not just anything overseas. So I thought that was great. Take every opportunity you have. Like I say, I've been very fortunate. My career has taken me over two or three different states in D.C., overseas, Pacific, Europe, and they've all been fun. You make out of your career what you want it to be, and that says a lot. And I'll leave with one other thing I told the wing staff, for example. Our primary job is to, number one, help Colonel Fitzgerald manage and lead the wing. So whatever she needs, we need to be able to support her with that. The second thing is we are there as the wing staff to help support the rest of the wing. And third, and this is something I think is important for all our airmen as well, is 10% of the time, you need to take time for yourself, whether it's ensuring you're ready for the fitness test, whether it's you're ready to take your next exam, whether your professional military education, whether you're completing all of your CDCs on time, that sort of stuff. You do need time to make sure your own stuff is in line, and always be ready so you can stand up and take that opportunity when it comes to it.
So what's next for you, Commander?
I would love to be the commander if Colonel Fitzgerald decides to move on or retire. It's a great joy working for. Like I say, I come from D.C. originally. I didn't talk much about my background, but originally from Ohio. I grew up in Northwest Ohio. My wife's from Washington Courthouse. I went to Ohio State, ROTC at Ohio State, went off into active duty for 3 years, was fortunate to get picked up. Actually, when I was on active duty, I was an air battle manager. So at the time, I was familiar with the 123rd and what they do. But again, going back to what I wanted to do when I grew up was to fly. And I got to go to Mansfield. I got picked up by Mansfield. Just, again, happenstance, my private pilot flight instructor was a loadmaster, or I'm sorry, he was a flight engineer at Mansfield at the time. I didn't know what the Guard was at the time, but as I was looking to get into flying off of active duty, I happened to call him and say, hey, what do you do at Mansfield? So long story short, ended up getting picked up for a navigator slot there. BRAC 2005 hit. I got into engineering. I had an engineering degree and was working with Mansfield on some of their construction projects as a contractor. Did that for a few years. And then they opened up RPA to navigators if you had your civilian instrument commercial rating. So at the time, Ohio did not have RPA in 2006, 2007. So I looked at other units that had converted, and I was selected by the Fargo, North Dakota unit, who ended up living in Minnesota. It's kind of the sister city right across the river for 10 years. And before I went, then I went to the Bureau and then back here. So I just give you that background because I would love to follow Colonel Fitzgerald here, but I've been blessed with such a rich, some would call it crazy career. My wife would say that it's been crazy. You know, I've pulled her all over the United States, which has its own challenges. But being able to come back and serve at the 178th is a dream come true. So, who knows? You know, if I'm asked to serve as a follow on to Colonel Fitzgerald, I'd love to lead the wing. And then beyond that, I've had 28 great years so far. At this point, anything more, honestly, is gravy. If they want me to serve at the next level, I'd be happy to serve wherever. In Ohio, I'm we definitely want to stay put, especially as our two younger kids are now, one's in high school and one's in middle school. We want to give them a little stability so they can finish in one school and we're not bouncing around anymore. But say any anywhere in the state I'd love to serve. Maybe Joint Forces Headquarters at some point. But again, my heart and soul is here with the 178th, and this is where I want to stay for the foreseeable future if they'll have me.
So that does it for all of the kind of standard questions that I have. I have a couple of what I consider bonus questions that I ask everybody.
Okay.
They don't always make it into the show, so it just kind of depends on how people answer them. So the first one is, I believe leaders are readers. So what book has had the biggest impact on your life?
I'm laughing because I do agree that you need to be a reader. I challenge my kids to read. Growing up, I did not like to read novels or anything like that. And as an engineer, I read a lot of technical stuff, and I'm a slow reader. I'll say that. And I think that's always been my challenge, is because I'm a slow reader. I remember having to read a book with a friend, and even in grade school, and he was two or three pages ahead of me, and it was always just, I always felt like I was behind. So I'll caveat my answer with that, is that I'm a slow reader, and so therefore I don't read a lot. But saying that, I do think it's important. I guess some of the older books on World War II, I've liked reading about those and some of the stories. PT 109, the Kennedy story, I think was very interesting. And it shows, we're talking about leadership. I'll just give you a short snippet that sticks in my mind from that book is, long story short, a PT-109 is a PT boat. It's a littoral boat, that's a smaller boat that would go up into the rivers and stuff. And he basically went upstream with his crew, got hit. The boat sank. He and a couple other men were able to swim to an island nearby. And being the captain of the boat, it was on him to make sure his men were okay and to try to get to safety. And he had I think he went to Harvard or Yale or something. It was one of those big Ivy League schools, and he was a swimmer, happened to be a swimmer. But the amazing part was, and you think about where this took place in Southwest Asia somewhere, I can't remember the exact location, shark-infested waters, et cetera. Every night, he would swim out to the reefs where he knew the other PT boats would be coming by to try to signal to get them rescued. And you think about it, swimming out in shark-infested waters in the middle of the night, you know, to help out your fellow sailors and to hopefully get them rescued. I mean, you think about some of those things, you know, it puts things in different perspective. And after reading that, I was like, wow, that's, you know, that says a lot. You don't always hear about some of those stories like that, of fortitude and, you know, just sheer will to be able to do that. And they finally got rescued, thank goodness. But he did that for, you know, night after night after night under cover of darkness, hoping to get picked up by one of his PT boats. Another one I read, actually more recent, was General Colin Powell's biography. I got to meet him. It was neat. I was all excited. We were down at Andrews in Maryland, and I thought, oh, we get to go meet General Powell. And I had my flight suit on at the time, and I walk up there, and I'll never forget it. I shook his hand. He says, "Oh, great, another bag that's not working," meaning bag meaning another flyer. And being an Army guy, I laughed because it took me kind of. Took me aback, but it was kind of a fun jest that he poked at me about. But it was a good story reading his background and his bio. He grew up in New York City, and I guess it shows kind of like should show up every day, and you know have a good attitude and work like the Dickens. He did that as a kid growing up, and it's just a neat story of how he got to where he ended up being, you know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So again, that's probably one of the more recent things that I read that I think is inspiring, and that may be relevant. I know he's been out for several years now, but for our airmen now to read something that's a little more relevant about good leadership.
Actually, I think Lieutenant Colonel Moore also recommended that book during his interview.
Okay, good book.
Thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate you coming into the show.
You're welcome, Tech Sergeant Hughes. I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
That concludes today's episode of Beyond the Horizon. Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe and leave us a rating and review. If you're looking for more ways to connect with the 178th Wing, you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also write to us at beyondthehorizonpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, keep your eyes on the horizon.